Welcome to this episode of the Casual Shooters Podcast, your premier podcast for the casual shooter. This week's guest comes by way of Florida. He's a firearms instructor, as well as a professional shooter. In 2019, he was the Three Gun Nation overall national champion. That same year, he won a silver medal at the IPSC Rifle World Shoot. In 2022, he took third at Prairie Fire's Rank Competition. If you would, join me in welcoming to the show, Mr. Joe Farewell. Welcome, Joe. If you would, take a moment and introduce yourself.
Yeah, well, you started to cover a lot of the stuff that I kind of thought about. I wouldn't say that I'm a casual shooter. I would say that I am absolutely the depths of passionate shooter at this point. I kind of got myself to the place where now it's just about all I do.
Yeah, that's the next step above casual shooting right there.
I would think, it's been a wild ride, but I get to shoot. I was out shooting earlier. Got a little motivation from Instagram. I was working on a project here in my office, and then somebody tagged me in a story of them practicing. I'm like, oh, I guess I should go out and practice too. So I went out and hit the range for 2 hours, and now I'm coming back to have a conversation with you.
Just to go right back out afterward, I'm sure.
That'll be my one range session for today. But yeah, it's all gun stuff one way or the other, whether it's range time or dry fire or working on dry fire or editing videos or posting videos. It's all related.
Nonstop. All right, Joe, what I like to do is hit you with the hard questions right up front, make you sweat a little bit, and then the rest of the conversation's easy.
Deal.
All right. Favorite movie?
Gladiator or Saving Private Ryan.
Okay. Two classics.
There are two of them out there. I mean, there's so many, but those would probably be two of my favorites. Braveheart's up there too, but I don't know. If I haven't seen Private Ryan in a while. I watched Gladiator 2 weeks ago. It was just a great refresher.
Yeah, it's a great movie. All right. I've learned that a lot of people don't read books anymore. If you've read books, what's your favorite?
I read a lot of books, actually. I used to read a ton. I listen to a ton of books now. Because I'm traveling a lot, so when I'm driving or I'm flying, I'm generally listening to a book. Even when I'm out here working on the range, if I'm setting stuff up or whatever, I'll usually have an audiobook playing in the background. And I bounce around quite a bit. I listen to a lot of business books, a lot of marketing and strategy and also learning books. So my favorite book and what I recommend probably the most, especially when I'm teaching instructors, is The Talent Code by Daniel Coyle. It's Coyle. And that's a phenomenal book about how the human brain processes information and why, like the technique of training that I was forced to come up with when I started this, why it works. And it's the neuralization process of your neural pathways, or the myelination process of neural pathways. And it's just fun. It's really cool. So that's my favorite book currently.
Okay. You're actually not the first person to say that book. I've heard that before.
It's a great one. There's several other like it. I think Talent is a Myth is another one similar to that. The Talent Code is my favorite for sure.
All right. I don't know if you're into superheroes. If you are, who's your favorite superhero? If not, who's your favorite historical figure?
Superhero would be Iron Man and his cool stuff. And then historical would be Jesus. I mean, we just celebrated Easter, so that's the first one that comes to mind for me.
I thought that was Transgender Day of Visibility.
And that's some bullshit right there.
I 100% agree with you. I was baptized in the Jordan River, so I'm in your corner.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome.
Favorite gun and favorite caliber of all time. They don't have to be linked together.
That is a really tough one. I shoot three gun because I can't pick a favorite. So
indecisive.
I want to shoot them all, and that's why That's it. My favorite would probably be, I love shooting a rifle. I really do. So like, you mentioned rifle world shoot the last one. I'm getting ready for rifle world shoot again. And rifle is one of the, what I found with rifle is it's one of those guns that it's easy to get decent with, but it's really challenging to get good with. So I think that the learning curve is super fast. Like you get good, or you get decent with it really quickly. Like you can put an AR in somebody's hands and with just a little, you know, a day of training, they can be pretty solid. But to get really good with rifle, man, that is a lot of work. It is a drive. Now I think the learning curve is a little bit, you know, different with pistol. It takes a lot longer to get good with pistol, or get decent with pistol. And then it's a kind of a gradual grade, but the rifle side is tough. So I recently built a new upper for my Cobalt. And I used a new Cobalt barrel that they had. It's a carbon fiber wrap barrel. It's 14.5. Threw an unrivaled brake on it. It's a Perlow Bombers gas block just to kind of tune things up a little bit. And that rifle is shooting so freaking good. I was running it today. Posted on my Instagram story a little bit ago. Just shooting a 70-yard plate rack. And it's just like, the soft, actually, I don't know if I posted or not. No, I did. I didn't post that. I might later on, though. But it is the softest shooting rifle I've ever had. So I think that's my current favorite. The other favorite would be my Atlas Apollo, which is really surprising to me because the Erebus has been my gun of choice for the last like 4 years, 5 years that I've been shooting open division. And it's, you know, compensated 2011 Atlas is freaking amazing. And then when they released the Apollo this year, I knew it was going to be good. Like it's an Atlas. It can't not be good. Right. You take any $6,000 pistol. It's going to be pretty freaking awesome. But I was still planning to shoot my normal pistol, my Erebus for competition. And when I put them side by side, I was like, holy crap, this is really good. So that's it just shoots different. It's got a very different recoil pattern, and I like the way it feels. So that's my new favorite. That's my newest gun and my favorite gun.
Okay, and caliber?
I don't have a favorite there.
Okay, just whatever.
Yeah, I shoot it all. I love it all. I shot 308 last week, and I'm shooting 308 for heavy division this weekend at Battle for the South. So I like all the guns.
I like that answer. That's a good answer, actually. So I like to take the last question and make it more personal to the guest. So for you, because you do shoot a lot of different stuff, if you had to choose one competition and that's all you could shoot, what would it be?
One match or one style?
One style of competition, whether it be three gun, rifle, whatever.
For sure, three gun. There's no question there.
And is it just for the variety?
It's an apex shooting sport. There's no other shooting sport out there that requires as much of a shooter as three gun does. So where, like, now don't get me wrong, there's phenomenal athletes in every one of the shooting sports, but in three gun, you have to be a good pistol shooter to be at the top. You have to be a good pistol shooter. You have to be a good rifle shooter. And I'm talking close range and long range, offhand and barricade work. You have to be a good shotgun shooter. You have to be able to run slugs. And not only that, you know, a lot of people get hung up on stage planning. You have to be able to plan a, you know, minute to 2 minute long stage with all three guns, and it might cover 400 or 500 yards of movement with targets out to 600 or 700 yards. Like it is the most demanding sport. Maybe not physically. There's a lot of people who aren't, you know, super fit in the sport. I'm not super fit. I'm in okay shape, but it's not like I work out every day. It's not like tactical games. Like you have to be in damn good shape to be in tactical games. But I think that as far as shooting skill set, there's no other sport that demands more than three gun.
Yeah, I mean, you could add tactical games, but I feel like that's more of a fitness competition than it, with some rifle or pistol thrown in. Absolutely. That's how I see that. But I definitely see three gun as the most physically demanding of the competition sports.
Yes.
When it comes to firearms.
That would be 100% my go-to three gun. If I could only shoot three gun and I could shoot a match every weekend, I would.
We're under a little bit of a time constraint, not a lot, but a little bit. So we're going to, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions and then we're going to get right into the meat of things. So you are deep into competition and instructing. Did you grow up around guns? Is that how you got your start?
I did. I kind of grew up, we had a little family range on the property. And so I was able to go out and shoot growing up, but it was never anything serious. It would be like, you know, Sunday afternoon after church, we would go shoot 22s and 45s and whatnot. And then hunting as well. I did a lot of hunting in my teen years and, you know, shot deer all over the country and had a blast with that with my dad. But it was about the time that I was 19 or 20. I got my first pistol. I got married. I was shooting with a buddy. He and I would go and shoot at the ranges about every weekend. And we found a USPSA match. Like I saw a video. I saw a video on about 3-gun on YouTube. And I'm like, that looks freaking awesome. Let me see what's in the area. I found a local USPSA match. And he and I practiced for that. We made a lot of mistakes. And then we went and shot the match, a local match. And I still remember the very first stage I shot, the moment the buzzer went off and like everything that I thought I knew about shooting went out the window. And from that moment on, I was hooked. Like that was probably 2010, 2011, something like that. So 13 years ago, 14 years ago, probably 2011. And then, you know, from then on, like, I liked shooting. I enjoyed it. But that at that point, it became a passion. And I found something that I could work on. I found, you know, I was broke as hell. So I couldn't afford to shoot, but I would dry fire. And I would go and shoot the local match, you know, every month. And then got into law enforcement. And I was already in law enforcement at that point, but then went full time. In 2013, and that's where I kind of found a passion for instructing. Is that after that, you know, I started going to the instruction side, became an instructor for the department, and I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And I started teaching classes on the side so that I could afford to shoot competitions, because didn't make any money. I had 2 kids and a wife, and I wasn't able to swing the bills of a competition along with regular life on a cop salary. And so I was teaching classes on the side, and you know, that continued to grow. I started teaching classes around the country, and I'm like, okay, this is turning into something. And then in 2018, I had a couple things happen with the department where like things, 2016, 2017, 2018 were some crazy years. And I was working narcotics, I was working gangs. Was on a federal task force. I was doing all the cool shit that you can do in a police department. And we had all the BLM movement and all the stuff in Ferguson. And like, it was just wild, absolutely wild. And, you know, it was highly stressful. And at the same time, I realized that I was putting a lot of energy into shooting and instructing. And 2018, I had a couple wake up calls. I had one where, yeah, I was supposed to teach class and I got called into work and I had to cancel the class. And at the time I was barely making ends meet from the department. And I was like, this money sucks. And they made me cancel a class. I was going to make $1,200 in one day for the class. And I had to cancel it to go work because we had some burglaries. We had to do surveillance. And in that moment, I'm like, okay, that's more than my take home check every 2 weeks in one day. I'm like, this is a problem. And then that next weekend, my little brother, he was 5 years younger than I was, he passed away in a car crash. And like this,
damn,
huge wake up call for me that was like, you need to go do something more. And so I planned on like maybe figuring out a 2-year exit plan. And 3 months after that, I'm like, you know what, this is the right time for me to strike out on my own. So at that point, I left the police department and been doing instructing full-time since 2018.
So to set the record straight then, from 2011 to 2018, you were a casual shooter, sir.
Yeah. casual shooter. I was dry firing a lot. A lot of competitions. 2016, 2017, 2019 were some seriously heavy competition years for me. Really, 2017 to 2019. I think 2019 I shot around 30 matches and taught 115 classes that year.
Wow.
A lot. And, you know, 2020 was a very busy year for me as well, but I had a knee injury. I had surgery on that. So it was just a lot going on. But the 2018, 2019 years for me were absolutely insane.
Now we'll get into the meat of some of the stuff I want to talk about, because most of my guests are pistol shooters. I had AJ Anthony on recently, so he's, so, you know, he's rifle, but most are pistol. So I love to take advantage of rifle shooters coming on. So that's what I want to talk about, primarily right now. You just shot the, IWI World Carbine Shootout.
Yep.
And what did you think? What were your thoughts on that?
So that was a cool match. And I talked to Donnie Flo, who's the match director, quite a bit leading up to the match, to try to get things set for what we were looking for with that match. The goal was to make a good match that a lot of people are going to enjoy shooting, but number two is also kind of make it a prep match, a little shakeout match for Rifle World Shoot. And they're going to do more of these matches in the coming years, which is cool. But Rifle World Shoots this year in August, and a lot of us do that. So on a personal level for me, it was I want to go and you know, lay down a win at this match, and put a lot of work in on shooting alphas and the precision rifle stuff on the offhand side. And I was on Team USA for the last Rifle World Shoot in 2019. I didn't make the team this year. We have an amazing team. We've got Tim Yackley, Scott Green, Daniel Horner. And who's the fourth one? Are on the team. Like, this is a phenomenal team. Like, those guys I can compete with any match in the country, we're going to be really tight with. Like, they're it just is what it is. They got the slots. So, but on a personal level, I was like a little vendetta. I'm like, I want to go and beat these guys at the mat. Well, and AJ Anthony was as a substitute. So we go to the match and we've got Kyle Litzy, Dan Horner, and AJ Anthony there. I'm like, okay, well, I can at least show these guys up. And they were the three guys that bumped me from the top three. So I went in fourth place. I'm all right, you guys pick the solid team. So now I just got to go Rifle World Shoot and beat them there, which that's okay. I can handle that. The match itself was really solid. There's a good mix of Ipsic style, kind of shorter stages, and some good long range three gun style stages where you got, you know, a lot of running and a lot of targets. So there were definitely some things that need to be tweaked on the match. And I've already had a great hour long conversation with Donnie about how we're going to change some of those things for the future matches there. But it was a really good mix of stages, and I thoroughly enjoyed the match. I got some good things to work on. My biggest issue and kind of where I figured out how I lost the match was with actually close range paper. I had a couple of misses, and it was all on close range paper, and I just was not giving the respect I needed. I've been practicing on mostly 50 to 60, 40 to 60 yard offhand paper and steel and whatnot. So then when you throw some really fast stuff up in front of my face, it was like, I let the wheels come off, and that goes right into my training log on what I got to work on for next time.
So as Steve Anderson would say, you disrespected those close targets.
I disrespected those close targets 100%, and they came back to bat me in the ass.
It's amazing how much things cross over, you know, between pistol and rifle. It's the same fundamentals apply to both sides. So, absolutely. Okay. So the World Shoot team was selected by a committee.
Yes.
Do you see at some point, because look, I've not done anything with rifle, so I'm not sure how that side of it works. And you've been to an Ipsic World Shoot before, so you were on the team. Do you see where going forward maybe, or has there been any talk of having actual rifle qualifiers so people can shoot, get points, and earn their way?
Yes. And that was initially, this match was supposed to be part of that. And then they had, I guess, because of the timeline, they needed to pick teams sooner than the match. And, you know, it's one of those things that planning wise, we better as a collective body to plan these things out better. And we need to say, hey, right, you know, PCC World Shoot is next year. Okay, we should have those matches already leading up to it. And granted, USGS has nationals. We have IPSC nationals that you can pull some of that stuff from. But for shotgun rifle, last rifle World Shoot, they basically picked based off of how many multi-gun national and regional matches you had shot, and if you shot rifle World Shoot the year before. So it was a very limited qualifier. And I think this year they did better because they had a committee. You had to submit an application, and the committee can go and make the decision. And it was a weighted vote. So I think it was a good way to do it. That way we're actually fielding good teams, because the way they did it before was not great, because it was really, I got onto the team not because I was the most qualified, and granted I put together a good score. But Max Lee Grandis, I know he put in for the team, but he hadn't shot multi-gun nationals except for, I think, one time, and then he hadn't shot any of the regional matches. Well, there was only one area match for multi-gun, and that was Area 6, and it just so happened to be in my backyard. So I went to every Area 6 multi-gun match since they started it, so I had a big leg up there. Well, that's not a very fair way to do it. So what I would love to see as a fair way to pick teams is what they do for pistol, which is have your slot matches, have your qualifiers. Hey, if you want to get points, you need to go shoot IPSC nationals. If you want to get points, you just need to shoot USPSA multi-gun or you know, pistol nationals, whatever the pistol nationals are. And that's going to set you up to get on the team for a world shoot. And I think that's the most fair way to do it. If you have those around the country. But if people are wanting to go to a world shoot, they're willing to invest in travel already. You need to have, you know, maybe a West Coast, East Coast, and have a couple of matches. That way we've got qualifiers that we can go to. Multiple qualifiers would be good. That way it's not just a one match performance. But and that's how we need to pick a team, not just based off of a popularity contest or how you did it one match.
Yeah, I would see something like maybe within, because it's every 3 years, so maybe have two qualifiers. We'll say two qualifiers a year, or three, and then maybe do like the best four out of six. So you don't have to go to all of them, but you need to shoot four of the. You know, if you shoot all six, great. That just improves your odds, and you take your four best standings and calculate the points and let the chips fall.
Absolutely great way to do it, for sure. Specific, you can't pull multi-gun nationals and say, hey, we're going to pick shotgun world shoot team based off of how you get the multi-gun nationals. Because you might have a not great shotgun shooter. Now, yes and no, but you may not have the best shotgun shooter at for the team based off of multi-gun nationals rules, because you're talking about pistoling as well.
And it also depends on the flavor of that match. It could have been heavy pistol. So yeah, there's a lot of factors. One's not a sample size big enough to determine anything.
Absolutely.
Now, as we start getting into this rifle stuff, I want to go back for a minute, because you said you have a 14.5-inch carbon wrapped barrel. With that barrel, how far are you reaching out to targets accurately?
I've shot 800 consistently.
With what size projectile?
75 grain load that I aim at. The length of the barrel does not affect accuracy. It affects velocity. And I am going to build an 18-inch here in the very near future. I'm planning on running that for rifle world shoot. I haven't had an 18-inch in the past 7 years or so, but I think this 14.5 is super soft shooting. It's very, very flat. I'm able to put really good in the shot, but I think having a rifle length gas and an 18-inch barrel is going to just give me a little edge. Mm-hmm. And for three gun, I like having a shorter barrel, but for IPSC, I don't think I'm going to lose the mobility as much as when a game, you know, stability, mobility versus stability, right? So when I'm working the 14.5, obviously I can manipulate that a whole lot faster. I love working around, you know, barricades and stuff with that. But that 18-inch, I think, is going to be the ticket for a long range. Last rifle world shoot, I shot a 12.5, actually. I shot a real short little gun and did well with it. But I think I could do better with the longer barrel.
Okay. The reason I ask is my background is long range. And yes, the reason I specified as for accurately is because there is a maximum effective range with velocity.
Yep.
And once you reach that, once you get beyond that, that round starts to tumble. Because yeah. I saw that with 168 grain bullets at 1,000 yards. Mm-hmm. Some of them would start, you're reaching that maximum range and you wouldn't even get a crack. You would just hear it go overhead and it would start to tumble. That's why I was asking about the 14. So you're doing, it's still maintaining velocity at 700-800 yards.
Yeah. And I tested out actually with a 13.7 that I was running before. I haven't taken this one out to hit 800, but a 13.7, I was at 800 and I was hitting very consistently. Beyond that, you're right. That was like my max to get consistent hits. Beyond that, it was kind of falling apart. But with with three gun distances, we're shooting very rarely you're going to target beyond 600 yards. Every once in a while, in most matches with long range, so your Texas, your North Carolina, your I'm trying to think what other matches you're going to have a lot of long range, but you know, Missouri, some of these matches that do have long range targets, you're going to have maybe four or five targets that are beyond 400 yards. Some of them are going to have more. Texas is pretty well known for having a lot of long range. The match I'm shooting next weekend in North Carolina, that we're probably going to have two or three targets beyond 500 and maybe, you know, another four or five targets beyond 400. So it's got some pretty decent amount of long range, but the target size, a 550 yard target is going to be an 18 by 24 target typically. And so it's a pretty sizable target. You know, the minimum size that we're shooting is generally 4 MOA. So if you're shooting a 12 inch plate at 300 yards, that's a 4 MOA target. And that's going to be a tough target. Most of the time I'm putting a C-zone seal out at 300-400 yards. And then you're looking at an 18 by 24 if you go out by 500 yards. So with that knowledge, I don't need a tack driver at 500 yards. I need a 1 MOA to 2 MOA gun, and I'm solid. Now, I don't want a 2 MOA gun. I want a solid tack driver. But you don't need a super high-velocity rifle. It's kind of a personal preference.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. A 2 MOA gun gives you, because I always look at it like this when I talk about accuracy. I want the gun to be as accurate as it can be because that helps me, the human factor. It gives me a little bit more room for error. So if you have a 2 MOA gun and you're shooting a 4 MOA target, that means I have 2 MOA freedom that I have to hit the target. So
yeah. Flop zone.
Yeah. I consider myself a professional stalker now because I have to I have to research people, so I'm always stalking their whatever I can find about them. And I there was something specific I really wanted to talk to you about, and that is your 55 grain versus your 75 grain and how it pertains to matches. Because I watched your video with your zero comparison, 10 to 100 yards every 10 yards. You were shooting pasters to see where you were impacting.
Yep.
Much like pistol shooters do, you know, for practical shooting. But now here's my question. I don't even know how to word this. It's very convoluted. You run 55 and 75 grain, so you need to know both.
Yep.
And you could literally be running 55 grain on one stage, 75 grain on the other.
Yes.
So how do you manage that in a match?
It's pretty simple, actually. When I zero my rifle for the 75 grain so that my holds drop effectively, because the long range is the important side. And then I check the impacts for the 55 grain. And when you're inside of 100 yards, the impact variance between 75 grain and 55 grain is minimal. There may be a slight amount, but that's why I go check it. If I'm shooting, generally, I try to shoot paper, up close paper with 55 grain. And it's just because, look, 75 grain is expensive. Okay. It's something I have, maybe I have 10,000 rounds of 55 grain I could shoot. I've got 1,000 rounds of 75 grain. I don't want to burn through my 75 grain if I don't want, if I can help it. Right.
Right. Yep.
A lot easier. So with the long range stuff, I try to save that for when I'm shooting long range. Now, I'm not going to sit here and if I've got six long range targets, I'm not going to put six rounds of long range on top of a mag of 55 grain. I'm going to load up that mag of 55 grain or of 75 grain and burn it if I have to. It is what it is. These matches are expensive. It is an expensive sport, and understanding that and accepting it for what it is part of this. If you sit here trying to count your rounds while you're on a stage, so you shoot 55s on the paper and then 77s on the long range, you're going to be thinking about things that you don't need to be thinking about on stage. So when I'm setting up for a stage, if I've got four paper in front of me, I might put eight rounds of 55 grain on top of a mag, and then the rest will be 75 grain. Or like what happened at the IWI match, there was a stage where we had about 60 rounds of, or maybe it's 50 rounds of rifle. And then you had some long range. And so I ran a 50 round mag of rifle of 55 grain. And then once I finished that up, I reloaded into my long range bag. And so those are a couple of different ways I'll do it. Is I'll either stack rounds on top, if I've got a couple of close paper, but if it's a bunch of long range, I'm not going to try to play with that at all.
What's your breakover point? At what point do you go, okay, all of these targets are 55 grain. All of those targets are 75. Is it 100 yards?
Usually it's 100 yards. Yeah.
Okay. So anything inside of 100, you'll throw 55 grain at it.
Yeah. And I can shoot. Now, don't get me wrong. I'll practice with 55s. I've practiced long range with 55s quite a bit. And they shoot pretty close, but you're not getting as much drop. It's a much flatter shooting round. It's not as accurate, and I'm not using my holds the same. So I like to practice with both, but if I'm just shooting season on steel and I'm focusing more on building positions, I don't mind practicing with 55 grain. But if I'm in a match, I'm going to run 75 grain for all, pretty much anything outside of 100 is all going to be 75 grain.
As you were talking, I was like, we could go deep, deep, deep into that, but that's not for this episode.
I will throw this out there for anyone listening that is confused on this. The thing that you need to know is take your optic, and in order to develop your zero, I have a way that I do this. You need to put your optic and everything into an app, and I use Chairgun Elite Plus or Pro or whatever it is. It's like a $12 app. It used to be Strelok, and they banned that because it's Russian. But Chairgun Elite is a solid app. Put your data into there. You have to get velocity. Velocity is super important. You have to have your mechanical offset correct in there. Most of the time, it doesn't come correct. So make sure you measure the distance from center of scope to your center of bore, usually about 3 inches, depending on your scope height. And you need your ballistic coefficient. You need those three things. Once you have those three things, then you need to put your data into that app and you need to see where the holds are. And I will adjust my zero based off of what my holds and my lines are. What I want to see is my first hash, my first mark in my optic, that should be my 300-yard hold. My second one, 400, and my third one, 500, approximately, depending on the optic that you're running. If those are close, then I'm happy. Okay, if I can get those, if at least the 400-yard hold is dead on, the other ones are going to be pretty freaking close. So what we don't want to do is say, all right, I need a 5,200-yard zero, cool. And then we are at, the next line down is at 325 yards, and the next line below that is 430 yards. Well, now if I have a 400-yard target, I have to put my 400-yard hold at the bottom of the target. make it simple so you don't have to think. The more you think, the longer things take. So we want to make things as simple as possible. So I don't care where my zero is. I care where my holds are for the long range. And so my zero currently, I think, is a 220 yards on my rifle, I believe. I'll have to double check that on me. But that's what makes all my holds line up correctly. And it varies based off of the rifle. One rifle may be a 220, the next one may be 175 yard zero fence.
For people getting into rifle, you're going to have to find a range where you can do that. Not everybody has a local range that goes out to 200-300 yards to allow them to do that.
Well, and you don't have to have a super long range to get the data that you need. You got to get the data and put it in the app. And then the app will tell you where you need a zero so that your holds line up. And I've got a full video on this. I went really in depth on this in the Dry Fire Crew community. Post a lot of longer form training videos over there. And I went deep into this and showed screen shares of what I'm doing and how I'm putting all the stuff in. And when you look at the data and you put all the data into the app and it says, hey, if you have a 46 yard zero, this is where your holds are going to line up, and you can see it as an overlay of your optic. It's really simple and say, okay, well, that's not where I want them, so let me bump it up half a minute or 2 mils and see where that comes out. Okay, this is where I want my zero. That means I need to zero my rifle, or these are where I want my holds. That means I need to zero my rifle at 42 yards. And that's going to be pretty good. Now, the 42-yard zero has to be perfect, because it might be a 42/180. And I will go out and check the 180 zero because I want that to be perfect. And the 42 is whatever. But if your 42-yard zero is half an inch off, then you may be completely SOL.
It's magnified. Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, and this is where I'm saying we could go so deep into this, because I have actually zeroed at 100 yards. And then for shooting out to 1,000, I'll run my numbers, see where my impact should be. And at 100 yards, I can confirm certain numbers based on where my impact goes once I start making corrections on my scope.
Yes.
So,
and that's true in your rifle. Confirming your holds and true in your rifle.
Yep.
I'll do that. And that's where having the long range does help. I have at my home range, I have 350 yards, so I can get out to 350, which is pretty good for truing. At least I can check my first, two holds. And then I have another place that I can go about an hour from me where I can get out to 600. 600 is all I need for three gun. And what I'll do is my holds and say, okay, I've got a target up at 400, put my 400 hold on it, make sure that 400 yard hold is true.
I think the other thing that I was going to say earlier when you first started going, and we talked about the difference between 55 and 75 grain and how you're saying it's not quite as accurate, is pistol shooters typically don't have to worry about the barrel twist.
Yeah.
But there is a significant difference. If your gun is set up for 55 grain, so the twist rate is matched for a 55 grain, it's not going to work for a 75 grain. It's not going to stabilize that round in flight the way it's supposed to. So that is something that I know you have obviously taken into consideration.
Absolutely.
And that's why the further out you go, the less quote unquote accurate it would be.
Yep. And barrel twist rate, I'm fortunate to be able to try multiple different rounds. So I'll try a 77 grain Tip Match King versus a 77 grain Sierra Match. This is a 55 grain Hornady versus a 50 grain, or a 75 grain, 72 grain, 67 grain. I'll try them all and see which one groups the best with my rifle. And once I figure that out, then that's what I'm sticking with for that rifle.
Now, are you loading your long range ammo, or okay? So you're just buying factory.
I used to load all my ammo, and I actually was talking about this yesterday because I found my loader. It's in storage right now. And I was talking to a friend of mine. I'm like, last time I was using this, it was 2017, maybe 2017, 2018. No, it was probably 2018. 2018. maybe 2019. I remember I was loading some 9mm. I bent a decapping pin and pissed off. I'm like, this is, why am I loading at a 12 cents a round when I can buy 9mm for 14 cents a round? And that'll tell you the year. I'm not going to load anymore. So I stopped loading then. And I literally still have that bent decapping pin in my press right now. Because I put a bag over and I never use it since. And at that point, I decided to buy my ammo, and it was super cheap at that point. I think rifle 5.56 was like 27 cents a round, 25 to 27 cents a round if you bought it in bulk. And 9mm was literally 14 cents a round. I'm like, I can't trade my hours to load at 12 cents a round. And then fast forward a year and a half, 2 years, and we have COVID hit, and all this craziness happens, and 9mm goes to $1 a round. I wish I had a bunch of primers right now, because that would be nice.
Yeah, and I mean, now if you look at it, it's still almost double the price. You know, it's 25 to 30 cents a round, and the 5.56 is 45 to 50 cents a round.
It is. So,
have you considered like a 68 or a 69 grain, kind of like a compromise between the two, and what were your findings?
I was running a solid copper 67 grain from G9, and that round did really well. And for me, it was just a matter of I didn't have enough of it. So they had a batch they sent me, and I was running that for a little bit, and I liked it. But they had a whole bunch of 75 grain and a whole bunch of 77 grain. And so I tested both of those. The 75 grain worked better than the 77 that I had. So I went with that. I think that running a 67, 68, 69 grain is totally doable. And the reason why we run those heavier bullets is just to get to higher BC. It deals with the wind better. And when you run the lighter ones, at least you're getting some better velocity. Typically, you're getting a better trajectory. And I had a friend who would run, I think he was shooting a 52 grain VMAX, and you know, it's like a freaking lightning bolt,
laser. Yeah. Holy cow!
You give him, and he was shooting that out of an 18 inch rifle, and you know, he had his holds at 400 with anything, like it was shooting flat. The problem is if he had a light wind, a light breeze, he was holding, you know, three target widths of wind. And so that's where the play comes in. So if you can develop a good accurate load for a lighter bullet, then that's great. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just kind of a personal preference thing. And I know that 75s and 77s are kind of the go-to for the long range for three gun. The other thing too, to keep in mind, now most long range targets in three gun have a flasher on it. So you have an illumination that's going to tell you that you got the hit. But back when I started shooting, it was the teeter-totter targets. So you had to hit it, and it would, you know, it would pop up the back of it, so it showed that the hit was there. And if you hit a 500-yard target with a 54 grain or 55 grain, it would barely move. The kinetic just wasn't there. So an RO on glass watching for that hit might see it wiggle a little bit, and a good RO is going to call it. But there were plenty of ROs that didn't make those calls just because it didn't move like it was supposed to. And so, especially if you hit it like high on the plate or something like that. So a 77 grain, it's going to smack a little bit better. You're going to see those hits. Now, again, now it's not a big deal. I will say on a spinner, though, on a rifle spinner that's going to flip over, a heavier bullet makes a big difference. You're getting a lot more kinetic energy impacting that. And it's going to spin, you know, within one or two shots faster, which can be a big deal. One or two shots on a spinner, that might be 10 seconds.
I want to go back again. I also used Strelok, loved it. What app are you saying you're using now?
It's called Chair Gun Elite. And it's literally C-H-A-I-R, Chair Gun Elite. And it's a copy of Strelok, basically.
Yeah, I had bought the Pro everything with Strelok, and then all of a sudden one day it was like gone off my phone. I'm like, where did it go? And then I found out later that it was banned because of the whole Russia-Ukraine situation. So you having had shot Rifle World Shoot in 2019, And I know you said you've talked to the match director and there are going to be some tweaks, but how close of a replication was the IWI World Carbine?
I think you'll never. So from 2019 to the IWI, some of those stages were pretty similar. And I'm not going to say that it's an exact copy because it's not. But the IPSC flavor is what they were going for. And the IPSC flavor is a lot of run to a position, shoot several targets, run to another position, shoot several targets. It's hit factor scoring. So that screwed up a lot of three gunners. And there's going to be some odd positions. So one of the best IPSC style stages they had there was like a very small stage, but you had three or four targets on the left with some, you know, one was a tuxedo target, one was an open target, one was a no shoot partial. Four targets on the right, it was an open with a no shoot and then a very tight partial, a small mini paper, and then another tuxedo, I believe. And then you drop prone and shot a plate racket like 90 yards. That is a very IPSC style short stage. And those types of stages are crucial to be good at. And when you're used to running, you know, the big long stage, the short ones, it's a different mindset, I guess, going into it. And it's a lot less forgiving on mistakes because there's no time for mistakes. You know, the first place versus the third place, it might be separated by a tenth of a second, and with all the alphas. So having that in your mind, you've got to be able to execute on the short stages. So I love seeing those there. He has some good mid-range stages too. And then I think probably four of the stages, there were 12 stages total, I believe. Yeah, 12 stages total. And probably four or five of those stages were kind of three gun style, where it was longer stages, a lot more going on. And you'll have some of that in IPSC World Shoot, but your general setup for a World Shoot match, you're going to shoot three short style stages, two medium style stages, and one long course per day. And you're going to do that for 5 days. So you got to be good at executing on those short stages. That's where a lot of the points are gathered there.
So as we mentioned earlier, AJ is an alternate for the World Shoot. He was not at 2019. He just got into this not, you know, like 4 or 5 years ago. So you shot World Shoot before he even got into competition. But for him, how well do you think this was a prep for World Shoot?
Well, it's funny because I remember AJ hitting me up, and this was probably 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. He hit me up and we did a private dry fire consultation. We did an hour and a half or so FaceTime dry fire class. And back then, I'm like, this guy's got some good potential. And seeing what he's done since then is like, holy shit, he is just crushed. It's been a fun journey to watch. So this match, I would say that there's definitely some good practice things from that match. I think it's a good prep match, but not exclusively IPSC style. So if you take the IPSC style stages and you take the training points that you get from each one of those, you can develop a good workout for a World Shoot. But taking the match as a whole, it's not a prep match for a World Shoot. There's definitely about half the match that wasn't like World Shoot specific.
Okay, so I assume that's the conversation you had with the match director going forward.
Yep.
And I think that goes with a lot of different IPSC stuff. I mean, in the States, we have our own way of doing things, you know. Yep. We have the American flavor, and that's what we do. So I could see where it's hard to get that exact more European or rest of the world flavor. All right, so I want to go to Prairie Fire Rank. Fall of 2022. How did you find out about it?
One of the people who was running the match reached out to me and told me about it.
And that I was, like it.
It was about a month before the match and was like, hey, this is the match that's going on. Or maybe it was 2 months before the match. This is the match that's happening and we'd love to. So I was trying to find where I could get to a qualifier and they're like, well, we'll get you out there. Now, they didn't do a second one. I don't know if they're ever going to do another one. But it was definitely, it was one of those events that was like, hey, we've got a huge budget to throw at this, and it's going to be amazing, and we're going to put everything into this. Also, it's going to be in 2 months, so make it happen. Like, what the cost is, doesn't matter. Let's throw money at the problem, and it's going to be amazing. And then when it happened, they're like, okay, this was not amazing. This is actually pretty terrible. And let's do it again better next year. And then they never happen. It never happened next year. So,
yeah, it didn't. I've been to Prairie Fire. I've been invited out there a few times by them to Nevada.
Yep.
So I do have inside information that I'm not allowed to reveal. But I know they are having a competition similar to that this year. And I know that in the future they plan on, they want to have it again. That I do know.
And anytime you're going to throw a big cash purse out there, you're going to attract some good shooters. Like, that's, there's not very many money bag matches out there. There really aren't. Like, if I go win that, I'll get a rifle out of it. Okay, I'm going to go spend, you know, $1,000 on a flight and a car, another $500 on room and board and all that stuff. So I'm gonna be into a match for, you know, at minimum, a travel match is $1,500 at minimum. Okay, $2,000 is pretty average for a travel match. Now you can cut some of this cost down by driving, by carpooling, by, you know, splitting an Airbnb six ways. Like, there's ways to cut some of that cost down, but I would say at the bare minimum, like, even with splitting costs, you're gonna spend $1,000 plus at a match. So there's plus match fee with ammo and all that stuff, and then you win a $2,000 rifle, maybe, right? There's not a lot of money to be made in the shooting sports, but if you have a $50,000 grand prize, a $25,000 second prize, and a $10,000 third prize, you're gonna have people gunning for that. And I did. I went there to go pull a $50,000 check, and I didn't succeed in that, but that was the goal, and there was a lot of money there. And when it was funny because I remember when I got third place, I was really bummed because I had, you know, I like to win. I hate to lose. I like to win. So I walked out of there. I was pretty frustrated with myself. And then I called Karen, my fiance. I'm like, hey, you know, this is how I ended up. She's like, well, what's the most you've ever won in a match? I'm like, well, this would be the most I ever won in the match. It's like, okay, then what are you mad about? I'm like, because it's still
they're still doing some pretty interesting stuff. Do you know who June Kim is?
Yes.
Okay. So June and I have become pretty good friends. Every time I'm in Vegas, we get together, we have dinner, we chat, we hang out. But I told him that the Beyond the Berm event, the week before, or days before SHOT Show, and into SHOT Show, they were having another competition. So he recruited Ken Yang and AJ Anthony, and they all three won staccatos at a competition at there. So again, I mean, that's probably at least a $2,000 yep. gun as well. And it was just, there were some, it was interesting. It was a 4-stage match. Daniel Horner participated, Phil Strader, KCUCBO, and then they had some MMA guys, you know, some VIP guys. But so Prairie Fire's not done yet. They're making waves. I think they're going to keep going until they're the biggest name in match something or other, whatever word I want to use. But
you know, anytime that you have anything like that, this different from the status quo, I'm willing to support. I'm willing to push that, especially when you see new money coming into the industry in the competition side, and they're trying to make it a more spectator friendly sport. I think they did a really good job of that there, besides some of the major issues they had in the initial match. And I really would love to see them become very successful with that.
All right. I want to, while we have a few minutes left, I want to talk about training real quick. You've got some stuff out, and one of them, I'm going to share the screen here real quick. All right. You have this Ergo challenge.
Yep.
I'm not going to be able to fit it to see it all. So I'm just trying to give a fairly decent representation of what it is here. And so what is it and what are you trying to gain from this?
The Ergo challenge is just it's a cold start target. And it's a way that you can go to the range and see where you are as a shooter. And it's, I'm not going to sit here and say that this is a new idea or it's any, you know, anything spectacular, because it's like every other cold start target out there. It's a drill that you can go. And one thing I like to use for this, I use cold start targets quite frequently in my class, especially my instructor course. I use those. But when I go to the range, I want to use what's called a macro drill, testing multiple aspects of my shooting, and then I will break it down into micro drills. So what this is testing initially is going to test your draw stroke. It's going to test your recoil confirmation or your recoil control. It's going to test multiple shot accuracy. It's going to test a reload. It's going to test your throttle control from bigger targets to smaller targets. It's going to test target transitions. So there's a lot of things going on to a small drill. And then once you accomplish that, we can then break apart and say, hey, if you don't know what you're working on today, you can at least hit this, and then it's going to give you some things to work on. Maybe your reload sucks. So let's go ahead and spend 10 minutes and work on the reload. Now, this is just a simple downloadable target. You can print it off, and it's that's what it is. It's a cold start drill.
So for the casual shooter who maybe listens to this or watches the video and they decide to download it, this just gives them ideas of or places they can work on, things they need to work on to get better in general.
Yes. Now, I will tell you, I have, and this, the Ergo Challenge, is it's a good place to start. I have a drills and skills pack, and this is something that I created last year, and I haven't pushed it out hard. I was actually working on it this morning. It's a mini course that I'll be giving away. I did a short period of time where I was giving away, and I just haven't promoted it since then. I'm rebuilding and restructuring it. But it's 7 different targets with video instruction on how to do it, the drills to do it, and that is going to be a really good resource for the casual shooter. So when you when that's ready, it'll be on dryfiremastery.com. It's my training website. Dryfiremastery.com is going to be where that's hosted. And that will be a really good option for people to actually develop skills. This is a good, just like, hey, let's go to the range and we're going to shoot this target real quick and see where we are today. And maybe that'll give us some stuff to work on. The drills and skills pack is going to give a breakdown of what you're looking for in each one of those drills. And it's dry fire based. So you can do a dry fire or live fire. And then on Dry Fire Mastery, of course, I have a whole bunch of other courses that are great for anyone from experienced competition shooters trying to make GM down to your, hey, I've never shot a match before and I'd really like to go learn how to shoot a match. I just did that intro to competition course for that last week. I released it. And then I have courses for people who are not even looking to competition. They're just like, I need to know. I bought a pistol in 2020 because everyone was doing that. And I'm not. So how do I actually use this gun? And that's a huge part of the population that needs that kind of training. And they may not have an instructor, or they have a really crappy instructor. There's a lot of like bad instruction out there. And they want to get a good way to do it from home. And so that's why I created this course specifically, is to make excellent training accessible.
Okay. It looks like you do like defensive carry style training, as well as the competition, as well as dry fire, and you have in-person classes.
I do. I don't have as many in-person classes now as I used to. Most of my time has been, it gets taken up with military or law enforcement contracts, which is not a bad thing, but I don't have the time to devote to like, yeah, I used to do a 3-gun class like every other weekend all over the country. And now I've got family that I've taken some of that time and put towards my family now that has been good. It's important. And then I also put a lot of time into the online side. I can impact more people there.
Well, in the time that we had, Joe, that's what I wanted to cover. Was there anything else you want to add before we call it a show?
No, Dan, I really appreciate you having me on. I think this has been a good conversation. I love talking about rifle stuff. I love talking about the three-gun side of things. But I think that the training aspect is important. And that's what I've devoted myself to. That's become my not just my passion, but also my career. And being able to provide quality training, either in person or online, I thoroughly enjoy it. The last 4 days I've been on the range teaching, doing kind of a little mini private intensive. And I love doing it. I genuinely have a blast teaching.
When we get deeper into the year, more towards the off season time, most people consider to be the in between seasons, I'd like to have you on. We'll talk some World Shoot, talk much more rifle, some three gun and training.
Sounds like a plan.
Thanks for coming on, Joe. I greatly appreciate it.
Absolutely, Dave. I enjoy it.
Until next time.
Don't be a little bitch.
Yeah.